The Hard Shoulder.
With the all-new MG HS plug-in hybrid. Petrol freedom plus up to 120 kilometres electric range. MG. Recharge your soul.
As you will have heard over the last few weeks, that we had a big flu outbreak. It surged to more than 3,500 confirmed cases a while back, but the figure has slightly fallen back to 1,777 cases confirmed in the more recent days. So where are we exactly on the trends at this moment? Are we peaking and coming out the other side, or is there still dangers ahead after people mixed over Christmas? Here in studio is the Minister for Health, Jennifer Carol McNeill. You're very welcome, Minister.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can you give us an update? We've had this sort of idea, certainly in the UK, of peaking. Is that where we're at?
We looks like we have had a significant peak and we are plateauing. That said, we have had a lot of socialising over Christmas, and of course people will go back to school and work in different ways next week, and there could very well be another peak. However, okay, our vaccination rates are up on last year. 22% of children have been vaccinated. Really good vaccination rates in the over 80s, over 60s. So this, we always knew, was going to be a very severe flu. We knew that because we're able to watch what happens in the Southern Hemisphere. So we knew that it would be a hard flu, but it would also come a little earlier than it came last year. And we saw that very clearly in the number of people that presented to hospital, particularly in the first 2 weeks of December.
Now, those confirmed cases, are they the ones captured in hospital by GPs, or where are they?
It's a range. So okay, a lot of those, so they're the ones that we're aware of, but there's nothing, there's not 3,500 people in hospital with flu. We've seen a mix between sort of 500 and 600 people in hospital on any given day with flu. We have a certain amount of COVID and a certain amount of RSV, but really it's flu that is the dominant virus at the moment. And as I said, it is a severe flu. That said, our performance in terms of managing the hospital experience for patients has been transformed this Christmas and this flu season compared with any before. And I really want to thank all of the people working in our 29 acute hospitals and our community hospitals and all of the different healthcare settings. Also the GPs, who we have put extra investment this year into GP clinics, so people can go to a respiratory clinic that the state is putting extra investment into to keep people out of hospital where possible. But really in hospitals, notwithstanding there being about 600 people there with flu on any given day over the last month, we have exceptionally low numbers of people on trolleys, and that is because of the very different way that we're working this year and as opposed to any other year.
You've mentioned a few factors there. If you had to isolate one of them, what's been the sort of silver bullet, I use that word advisedly,
the difference from previous years? Well, the difference in the hospital experience is that we are working at weekends and we are discharging patients at weekends, which makes it a flatter, more even flow, and it's a much better way of running hospitals. Hospitals have to run 7 days a week, not 5 days a week, and myself and Bernard Gloucester and everybody in the HSE have been really driving that hard this year, and we're seeing exceptionally low comparative numbers of people on trolleys, which I think is a really important marker for how people understand what their experience is going to be. It's something that we've talked about in Irish society for a long time, going back to Enda Kenny in 2007, I'll End the Scourge of Hospital Trolleys. I'll just give by way of reference, there's 29 hospitals in Ireland. We have 139 people this morning across the 29 hospitals on a trolley. This day last year, that was 402. Yesterday, on New Year's Day, there were 70 people. That day last year, there were 251. It's a huge
difference. You'll have people
screaming
at the radio saying it's still too high.
But what we have, though, is we triage it into whether a hospital is green, amber or red. What does that mean? Green is an acceptable number of people on trolleys. You come in, you're triaged, you're diagnosed, you've been admitted to the hospital and you're waiting for a bed upstairs. So in one hospital, that might be 5 people on a trolley. In another, that might be 15, depending on the size. But we know what's comfortable, what's not comfortable and what's actually dangerous. And we measure that in green, amber and red. But what the difference there has been between 2024 and 2025 is a hugely significant reduction in the number of days that have been in that dangerous area, that red
area.
And
does it mean, because we got the Australian strain early, you've mentioned that a few times, does that mean in general terms we come out earlier on the other side, or is that not necessarily the case?
Not necessarily the case, depending on how it hits when people are socialising over Christmas and when they go back to school. It is notoriously difficult.
So a second wave type effect.
It's entirely possible, and we sort of never know that week 52, week one, that Christmas period, how that's going to play out in terms of socialising and the flu and how that's operating at any given time. But can I say to you, if you'd been talking to me the week before Christmas, I would have said, I'm really worried about Stephen's Day. On Stephen's Day, there were only 16 people on trolleys. I'm now telling you I'm really worried about next week, but let's see where we get to next week. Next week is a week when people come back from holidays. People who are working in hospitals come back from holidays. It's a sort of everyone getting back to the system.
It can catch you by surprise.
It can catch us. And okay. So I am a bit worried about Tuesday and
now,
Wednesday
next week. Now the learnings, because we don't know, Minister, it's a volatile world. We don't know, but hopefully you'll still be Minister at this time next year. And there are certain learnings there. And I just have to say to you, is one of them, and you may disagree with this, but is one of the learnings to give that more souped up vaccine next year? Whatever about the reason I debate about it this year, like, would you not be of the view, look, let's just do it next year? It's not a huge budgetary outlay.
Well, there's no evidence that it works any better. So, for example, the UK and Australia, it might have the word enhanced in the title, but whoop-de-doo, UK and Australia had it, and they had a much more severe flu experience than we've had. We had the vaccination that was recommended by the World Health Organization.
Well, why not just show belt and braces? I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Because I'm spending your money.
I understand.
So
that,
what I'd like to do with your taxpayers' money
is maximise the effect
and maximise the value, because that additional 11 million euros can pay for very significant something else elsewhere in the system. So I think it's my responsibility to make the best choice that I can based on the information that I have and to do it the most cost-effective way.
Presumably, you're saying, as of now.
But the science that's available to me at present from the Chief Medical Officer is that it doesn't work necessarily better than the other vaccines and than the vaccine that we have chosen that the World Health Organization recommended. And our flu experience has been better than the UK and Australia. That's largely in part, can we be honest, because we've had a slightly higher uptake of the vaccination than other European countries, for example. So the most important vaccine is the one that the World Health Organization recommends and the one that people take. You have to take the vaccine
to be effective.
I
suppose people listening
did you get
say,
it yourself?
I did actually, yeah.
Did you get it in a pharmacy or
I got the
GP?
COVID one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
on the same day.
On the same day. It was pharmacy or GP?
Pharmacy.
Yeah, because for example, the vaccine is free for children, but only 22% of children have had it. Now that's up from 17% last year.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is about making it. It's not
I
just
suppose
about
people would be just saying, well, like, are all these learned doctors in the UK all wrong then? You know what I mean? Like, why? What do we know that they don't know that we didn't get it? You know what I mean? Like, it just seems.
But I mean, there's a fixation on the word enhanced, right? Mm. But I present you with the science that says it doesn't necessarily work any better. If I were to call it R1, the shiny.
And I suppose you'll be collecting data from this period as well, which you'll be reviewing. You know what I mean? Like when it all comes in at the end of the whole thing.
Well, more than that, though, the science available. First of all, the World Health Organization set which vaccines they think are best appropriate. And they do that nearly 9 months out from the flu based on the data that they have. Now, Ireland is a country that respects the World Health Organization and follows its guidance. And so we chose the vaccine that they recommended. The UK got one that has the word enhanced in it. They haven't had a better experience. There aren't significant studies that show it's better. But look, my mind is open all of the time. Of course it is. We're always going to try and make the best decisions for the people of Ireland.
I suppose the way it was presented was like the government are stingily saving 11 million euros when we could be getting a better quality of vaccine. That's what you're objecting to, the way it was presented.
Well, I'm not objecting to anything. I'm simply saying there's a range of vaccinations out there. The World Health Organization recommends one of them. We decide that based on the data, that is the right one to get. It's also cost effective. I can't spend people's money willy-nilly. Imagine I came in here and you said, you spent all this extra money on a vaccine that has been not shown to work any more effectively than the regular one. Which would be a very reasonable charge.
Yep.
I'm the person that has to make the decision. I make the best decision that I can based on the information that's there, based on good scientific sources and a real concern for value for money.
Let's stay with other stuff in your area of responsibility. A lot of people texting in about the Children's Hospital. And I'm not saying this in a sort of a slightly jocular way, but we know we're hoping to get it open by next Christmas. And a lot of people say, which Christmas? No, so is this real now? We've had so many problems, not all by
I
you, to be
said,
fair.
No,
but,
I
but
haven't
when,
said
when
that.
Do you think the Irish state could fully and the department or and so on take full possession of the property?
Well, that's the answer to that is when the contractor gives it to me. BAM.
And but surely now, they've taken it far enough at this stage that it's...
Well, you would think, wouldn't you?
And I've dealt with BAM over the years myself.
You would think, you would think, because this hospital has been 99% ready now for the complete time that I've been minister. BAM is the company company that has a contract with the Irish state.
So what's
BAM,
left?
If I could just finish. Yeah. BAM have set their own timelines on the completion of the contract. BAM keep putting that back. And BAM are the people who are responsible for delivering to the Irish people the hospital that they have contracted and been paid for. And as I've said time and time again throughout this year, I saw insufficient numbers of contractors. Ireland, the Irish state was only too delighted to pay contractors to finish the hospital. BAM didn't have those people on site. I have seen an uptick uptick in their work and in their presence since September, when we've really started to highlight this, and we now have early access. So the bit that I can control is not that. I can control how long the commissioning period takes, and we've managed to bring that down from about 12 months to about 7 to 8 months. Now, it can't go any lower than that, because there are certain lab equipment pieces that have to be commissioned on site and do take that long. So it is in BAM's hand when I get full access to it, but we will drive as hard as we can to have that commissioned
Minister,
as quickly as
possible. Before I let you go, because I know you've been busy, we can hear that through all the stuff you've been talking about here in your area of responsibility, but the housing crisis continues to bear down. We've got figures out this evening, so that's why I'm asking. We're at 17,000. We've over 5,000 children in emergency accommodation. I know it's not your area of responsibility, but you are a member of the Cabinet. I mean, we've a new plan announced in November, yet another one, again, not yours, but colleagues of yours. Are we making any headway when you see those kind of figures?
Well, the numbers are too high.
Because it's actually disastrous.
The numbers are too high, and there's nobody in the government, nobody in the Dáil that would dispute that. And everybody across the Dáil is agreed on that. Now, looking particularly at the number of families presenting to emergency accommodation, there was, you know, in the last quarter quarter three, over 900 families, but 400 of those were prevented from entering emergency accommodation and a solution was found. I see it in my own constituency, a family coming to me in a crisis, but often being prevented from going into emergency accommodation. And that is just as important as those that do go in. And of those that do go in, of course, you know, maybe 300 of that move out into a supported tenancy. It's too high.
But
the
Minister,
numbers are too
yeah,
high,
the other thing that
but I just
me,
want people
yeah.
to understand that there are families being prevented from going in and families moving out as well.
What I found slightly peculiar, and maybe I mistook them or, you know, didn't pick up the nuances here, but I mean, you had the Taoiseach and Minister of Finance, Simon Harris, saying on the front page of the Irish Times 3 days ago, there's a significant number of people in homeless emergency accommodation who don't have a right to housing in Ireland. A, is that correct? And B, why does he seem to be wishing to blame it on people who are coming from abroad, migrants, I presume, is what he's talking about. I mean, what? I know it's not your comments, but it seemed a peculiar one. It seemed to be almost like framing it as, well, if they weren't there, we wouldn't have as acute a problem.
So we know that there's a broad range of people in emergency accommodation, Irish people who are, you know, resident Irish people from the, you know, the broader European area and the UK, and then people not from the European Economic Area as well, not from the EEA. But, you know, you're in emergency accommodation if you have a right to housing. That's clear. And no matter what way you look at the complement of people who are there, there are too many people in housing, in emergency housing. There are also too many people who are waiting for affordable housing. There are too many people who are waiting to buy their own home, notwithstanding those numbers having increased very considerably. The numbers are too high, and it doesn't matter about the distribution as much as the fact that everybody across the Dáil, the Taoiseach and absolutely everybody in the Dáil wants to see those numbers coming down.
Great. Listen, thank you very much for coming in. You've got a busy agenda for the year ahead. So let's get the flu out of the way and then we can move on to other things from there. Jennifer Carol McNeill, who's the Minister for Health, thank you very much for joining us in the studio here.
The Hard Shoulder. With the all-new MG HS plug-in hybrid. Petrol freedom plus up to 120 kilometres electric range. MG. Recharge your soul.